We have been facing retail theft in California.
There is actually a resale market in California that's quite healthy. So we have a black market on the streets, and this is easily visible. And you can go down this market, and they'll be selling things at a fraction of the cost of if you go in into the store and actually purchase it yourself. I've talked to police and law enforcement. They tell me there's a direct correlation here between drug addiction, retail theft, and these illicit black markets. There is multiple criminal elements that are occurring here.
It was never like this where you would have items be locked up.
They have to maintain profitability in order to stay in business. So we're seeing a double-edged effect here where it's more difficult to shop. It's also causing the price of goods to increase as well.
My guest today is Travis Gilmore, reporter with the Epoch Times. Today, he'll explain what's going on with retail theft in California and how the policymakers are trying to deal with it. We also sit down with another reporter from Epoch Times, Rudy Blaylock, who's going to share with us what he has seen on the ground investigating retail theft.
As long as it's below $950, then he would just walk out of the store, and he had a friend that would sell them on OfferUp. And he told me that he gets about a 30% exchange rate.
Does he have any idea how much he's stolen?
He estimated about $50,000. People on the streets understand the law, the drug dealers understand the law, and they're using it to their full advantage.
I'm Siamak Karami. Welcome to California Insider. Travis, it's great to have you back on. Welcome back.
Thank you, Siamak. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You're a reporter with Epoch Times, and you're actually in the Capitol. You're observing what's happening with the governor's office, and you're also looking at the legislative body. We have been facing retail theft in California. We want to hear from you what's going on and what are the different perspectives in Sacramento about what's happening with retail theft.
There are a lot of differing opinions about what's going on. And when you talk to the average Californian on the street, they'll tell you that retail theft is greatly impacting them. Businesses say that it's hurting their profits, really making it difficult to stay in business. And a lot of average Californians say this is really affecting their shopping experiences. Items that normally they could have just gone into the store, picked up, put in their card, or taken to the register and paid for, now are locked behind glass. We have all kinds of different stores taking different approaches to how to protect their inventory, but we're seeing a drastic change in how businesses conduct their day-to-day operations so that they can try to mitigate retail theft. In the legislature and in the Capitol, there are really differing viewpoints as to both what is actually occurring and how to handle this situation. And the legislature, rightly so, relies on data to set their policy. So they don't look at what we see on the streets. They're not looking at the videos or the social media content that everybody's well aware of. You see the smash and grabs. You see all these different things that are occurring. They look at spreadsheets. They want to see data so that they can make policy. And one of the things we have right now is what some believe is a disconnect between what's happening on the streets and the data. And so this has put us in a spot where legislatures aren't sure exactly what's happening. And the Little Hoover Commission, it's a commission that's employed by the state legislature. It includes lawmakers. It's a panel of 12. And they essentially look at complex situations and they create reports. And they do this at the request of the legislature. And last year, lawmakers asked the Little Hoover Commission specifically to look at the issue of retail theft. And just in the past weeks, the commission produced a report that basically said, we need more data, that in order to better understand and better set policy for what's happening, we need better data points and better statistics to identify how severe and how real this retail theft issue is.
So essentially what you're saying is the legislature is looking at this and saying we don't have enough data to determine if retail theft is going up or not.
Yes, absolutely what I'm saying. And you have differing viewpoints. You have some lawmakers who are adamant that retail theft is going up. They're looking at this with their own eyes. They're having all these calls from constituents to tell them it's going up, and they take that as fact. We have another side that's very, very cautious about increasing penalties for any sort of crime. And before they're ever going to be willing to do that, they need the data points to show them that. And what we have is a lack of statistical data. And we've talked to Rachel Michelin, the Retailers Association, and we've talked to the PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, about where this disconnect lies. And what they tell us is that there is significant underreporting. So a lot of retailers are experiencing levels of theft in which they do not call the police. And there's different reasons for this. Some don't believe that if they call that anything will happen. Some are calling, and they've told us this. We've had multiple retailers, managers, and owners of businesses tell us that somebody comes in, steals something, they call law enforcement, nobody ever shows up. And this has to deal with budget problems. While the state's dealing with a budget deficit, so are many cities and counties across the state. So we have staffing levels that are below optimal for a lot of police departments, and they're having to prioritize their responses. So if it's not a violent crime or there's not someone in immediate danger, a lot of times these calls get deprioritized. Maybe someone's going to come out later that day, maybe in a later day to come take a report, maybe not at all. And then also, if they do come out, what a lot of retailers tell us is there's no consequences. No one's getting in trouble for these things. This is most theft offenses in California are not arrestable offenses. These are citations are being issued. Prosecutors across the state, many have been on the show, many have told us that even if they have a citation issued, these people just completely disregard the citation. They don't even show up at court. So retailers take all of this into account. They have to pay time is money for these businesses, and they've basically made the decision that if they call in or try to make a report, it's just taking time. They're having to pay someone to do this when they've decided it's better off just to let it go. Unless it's some sort of serious offense that's well documented, a lot of times they don't even call it in. But when that decision's made not to call it in, that's now one theft that occurred that will never be on the data. So when we look at data that is being called in, and compare that with past decades, we're not at record highs. Now, you ask anybody on the street, they'll tell you we've never seen theft like this. But at the moment, we don't have data to support what we're all seeing with our own eyes on the street.
Because it was never like this where you would have items be locked up, especially sometimes very small items.
Yes, and I've talked to many, many people in the Sacramento area, down in Los Angeles, and in San Francisco, and they tell me stores are closing. We've had numerous retailers in San Francisco that have left, citing theft as a reason. And we've had, like you said, items that are inconsequential in theory, $3 and $5 items. You can go to a big box store in Sacramento right now for contact solution. This is saline solution that in theory should have no resale value. It's locked behind glass. Toothbrushes, toothpaste, basically everything in the cosmetic section is behind glass. And I've had gone on tours with managers in the area, and they've shown me how they've essentially built walls of inventory which they believe will not be stolen, and they've used it to make limited access ways into areas where they know there's going to be high theft. And while it seems to us that why would somebody want to steal saline solution or washing detergent, there is actually a resale market in California that's quite healthy. So we have a black market on the streets, and this is easily visible. Anyone can go into San Francisco late at night, even not that late at night. You can go down Market Street. You can be near Union Square, what was once one of the highest profile shopping districts in the world. And you can see items laid out, bags of coffee, diapers, washing detergent, soap, shampoos, all kinds of stuff where it's believed that these are stolen items. We don't know for sure, but we can go by and you can go down this market and they'll be selling things at a fraction of the cost of if you go in into the store and actually purchase it yourself. I've seen bags of oranges. I've seen everything imaginable for sale on blankets and on tables in Sacramento, even more so in San Francisco. And the retailers tell me that they don't want to spend money for them to put up this glass, for them to implement all of these different actions. It costs them money, both in infrastructure and in supplies. But then they also now, if somebody wants to buy a toothbrush, they're having to send an employee over there. And again, time is money. Every time that they need an employee to help a customer complete a transaction, their profit margins decrease. And this impacts Californians in more ways than one, because as the business's cost of business goes up and as their shrink, which is just a retail term for theft or loss, increases, they also have to increase prices because they have to maintain profitability in order to stay in business. So we're seeing a double-edged effect here where it's more difficult to shop. It's also causing the price of goods to increase as well.
Did you actually have any interactions when you observed that people are selling these items in the street?
Absolutely. I talk to those that are vending their items. I also talk to people that were buying the items just to see what was the mindset, what's going on here. And I talk to families in San Francisco in particular that told me that for certain items like diapers, they don't even buy it in the store anymore. They've recognized that I can get it for $5, what would have cost me $15. And this is somewhat understandable when you talk to these people that they're already in a situation where they can't make ends meet. They're on very tight finances and budgets. So it's not that they want to be contributing to an illicit market. It's that they need to be able to pay their rent, get some food for their children, and also get the diapers. So they're creating a demand for these products. And I've talked to the people. I don't know if these people are actually stealing it. I have seen
the sellers, right? These are the sellers. Right?
Yes, the sellers. There's multiple layers of what's happening here. Sometimes that person might have been the person that stole it. Other times, what one of the vendors told me was that they were essentially being employed to sell this stuff. They got a percentage of what was being sold. And so there's a serious drug addiction problem that's impacting the state. And I've talked to police and law enforcement. They tell me there's a direct correlation here between drug addiction, retail theft, and these illicit black markets. So what we essentially have is people coming into stores, they're stealing items, they're trading these for drugs. So the drug dealer is now in possession of a stolen item. They don't want to be the one on the street selling it. So now they have a homeless person or a vulnerable individual that they've essentially employed to fence or to sell these items out on the street. So there's a layer of protection for those that are actually committing the crimes. And there's multiple criminal elements that are occurring here. And a lot of this boils back down to the drug addiction. That's what led for the initial item to be stolen. Now that the item is in possession of someone who wants to turn it into cash, they then need to do something to make it happen. And there's multiple things happening all at the same time here that make it very difficult for law enforcement to do anything about these crimes. One is the nature of our criminal justice system in California, that any theft under $950 is automatically a misdemeanor. Misdemeanors in California are very rarely prosecuted. And if so, then there's really not any consequences for them. So there's a free-for-all at a certain level on the street where people feel like they can just walk into stores, leave with what they want, and then either feed their drug addiction or have goods that they need for their home life.
So you've gone and done the work, and there's been a lot of other reporters as well that have been reporting on this situation, right? That there's a system here. We're building a system outside of the normal way where these products are getting sold in the market. They're getting bought and sold somehow. What is the legislature or the governor, what are the state leaders thinking about this?
Yes, the governor and the legislature are both aware that we have a situation. They are not in agreement of how deep this situation actually is or what are the elements that are causing it. So there's numerous retail theft bills that were introduced this year that seek to tamper down this behavior. But if you look at the package of bills that the legislature is focusing on, they're really singling out organized retail theft. They don't take theft at the retail level in general, just anyone going into steal. They're really focused on this organized criminal element. And we've talked with several district attorneys and prosecutors across the state. Their concerns with this approach is that it adds one more element that they need to prove in court in order to gain a conviction. They now, not only do they have to prove that this item was stolen by this person, they need to show a conspiratorial element, that this was done in coordination or in action with someone else or with the intention to sell. And this, combined with what we discussed about how the intricate nature of the market, how there's multiple people at play here, makes it difficult for a prosecutor to prove that this was necessarily organized. So they, while they are looking at the issue, some argue they're not looking at the big picture. They're really trying to narrow it down into just one section. Organized retail theft is definitely an issue affecting the state, according to both prosecutors, lawmakers, and the governor. Just some say that it's only one part of what's affecting it.
So based on what you have looked into, are there any other factors or other perspectives?
Yes. The police and prosecutors say that there is essentially a percentage of the population that has become serial offenders. that they have identified a loophole, or what they classify as a loophole in the system that allows them to steal with no consequences. And whether they're part of an organized ring or not, these people are just choosing to not pay. They go into malls, they leave with what they want. They go into grocery stores, they leave with what they want. And they have become very savvy. They know that they can't steal more than $950 or they might get in trouble. So they will intentionally make sure that the threshold of their value of what they're taking is below the felony threshold. So they go in, they steal things, come back, some of them coming back to the same store in the same day to steal items. And this is not necessarily organized, but it is a fact that they have identified how to
There's not maybe a lot of people involved, and it's not they're not making big money out of this, but actually they're living this way. Is that, or portion of their living is made this way, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the volume of those also impacts the businesses. While organized retail theft definitely impacts businesses just due to the volume and the impacts it has on one-time occurrences, and a smash and grab can be considered organized because this is multiple people running in, but one person who is just a repeat serial offender might not be an organized criminal, but he has an organized structure of thought in the way he's figured out how to achieve what he wants while also avoiding any criminal charges.
Now, have you get in touch with anybody that's doing that, or have you seen anybody that's doing that?
I've never talked to anyone, or they're not willingly going to tell me that they're stealing, but they will describe to me how something might occur like this. So they're essentially telling me that people in their neighborhood have figured out that, oh, when I need groceries for my children, I just go in and take them. I've had multiple people tell me that it's become common practice to essentially be either using an actual calculator in the store or to be keeping a mental note while they fill their cart that I have to stay below $950. So there's an element of savviness or intellect that's being put forth by these criminals.
We're covering California issues, as you know. If you want us to cover the stories that are impacting your day-to-day life in California, reach out to me at siamak@californiainsider.com. You're an Epoch Times reporter, and you've been investigating retail theft. In some incidents, you have even gone to the field and you've talked to some of these people that are committing this crime. Can you tell us what you've seen?
Some of the homeless, they're using some of the loopholes in the California law that allow you to essentially steal and not see any repercussions if it's under a certain dollar threshold. So this individual in particular, he actually was very familiar with the law, and he had told me that he would go inside the big chain store and he would take his cart and put Legos inside of it, and he would count, plus tax. You know, he's very smart. He would count, how much is this going to cost? And as long as it's below $950, then he would just walk out of the store. But the sad thing is he would take these Legos, and he had a friend that would sell them on OfferUp, and he told me that he gets about a 30% exchange rate for the value of those Legos. So some of them could be $100. He might get $30 worth of fentanyl. He also told me that, you know, he doesn't have to look for fentanyl on the streets over there. He's literally said, fentanyl finds me, and that he can't escape it even if he wanted to. So they'll take electronics as well. That's like a popular thing that the drug dealers will take.
Now, you mentioned that he's been doing this on a regular basis and targeting one specific store, different stores within one brand.
Yeah.
And did he ever get into any trouble?
So, yeah, he actually did. He has gotten charged with grand theft 3 times, and those times it was above the threshold of $950. But he told me that he believes that the loss prevention and the police got smart, and this is what he said, and I'm not saying this, but that when he went to leave, they stopped him and they totaled up what was in his cart, and it totaled up to be more than the $950. But he told me that it was impossible. He calculated it. You know, he thinks that they scanned stuff a couple times so that way they could stop him. So he did some time in jail the first time a couple years ago. was put on probation, and then he did jail time again because he was caught again. And then this third time he was put in jail, I guess he is no longer on probation because he just had enough time served. So now they're not monitoring him. If he wanted to continue to steal, he would be able to. It just wouldn't be able to be above that that threshold. But he said that he's going to continue to steal. He was going to steal a pair of shorts because he didn't have any clean shorts to wear when I was with him.
Does he have any idea how much he's stolen from this specific?
He estimated about $50,000 is what he told me, is what he had stolen. And it had been other stores too. He would say he would take the bus and stop off at basically any retail store where he, it was for actually for camping equipment because his drug dealer and his drug dealer's girlfriend, they liked camping and hiking and adventure stuff. So it kind of depends on the drug dealer's hobbies, what he might steal in order to exchange for those drugs.
Do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
My observation so far is it seems that people have figured out the system. In this case, this individual, I had seen him telling his friends, encouraging them to do the same. Some people didn't believe that they're able to steal as he had been doing. And he explained to them the California law. And he even felt that he had the right to do it. You know, when he had told me the story about the police when they arrested him, and he thinks that they overcalculated. He thought that that was wrong, that they did that. So it seems that people understand the law. People on the streets understand the law. The drug dealers understand the law. And they're using it to their full advantage. And they probably even monitor some of the laws that change and make sure that they know what they're doing before they do it. So they are smart and they're resourceful. And that's just my observation so far.
Now, there is a lot of talk about solving this. You know, the legislature has some bills that they want to pass, and then there's a proposition, Prop 36, on the ballot. Can you tell us more about these initiatives?
Yes. Prop 36 is an initiative put forth by voters. So there's a group of prosecutors that initially put this together, and this is the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act is its common name. And these are signed by hundreds of thousands of Californians. These are issues that are resonating with many people across the state. And so they've now put forth this ballot measure that, if it's approved in November, will reform parts of Proposition 47, which was passed by voters in 2014. And Prop 47 was passed with a goal of reducing the prison population. And it did this by changing what used to be felony crimes, mainly for drug and theft crimes, changing felonies to misdemeanors. And so now it becomes more difficult for prosecutors to actually place somebody in jail or in prison for certain drug and theft offenses. And what Prop 36 seeks to do is change some of these back. So it will make it where for repeat offenders, so this doesn't impact someone who's caught with drugs for the first time or who's caught stealing something for the first time. But for those repeat offenders, it does allow prosecutors to charge felonies. But it does this in a way that seeks to address the root problem of drug addiction at its core. And we used to have state drug courts where people that were arrested for certain crimes, they would end up in court. The judge would offer them an alternative to going to prison where they could go into a drug rehabilitation program and potentially work their way out of the charge.
So they could either, if they had a drug-related issue, they would either go to prison or they would get rehab. They could go to a rehab.
Yes. And Prop 47, while we technically still have some state drug courts, when Prop 47 was passed, what prosecutors tell us is that it disincentivized these people from actually choosing rehab programs because they already are confident they're not going to jail anyways. Whereas if Prop 36 is approved, it will reinstate the potential for prosecutors. And there's judicial discretion here. It doesn't mean that someone convicted of theft is definitely going to be charged a felony. This is going to depend on what county. Different prosecutors have different motives, but it will allow for felony charges. And so for those people who are stealing repeatedly or repeatedly caught And this doesn't affect every drug. This is really, Prop 36 is targeting what are known as hard drugs. And mainly fentanyl is what the prosecutors are really looking to get some sort of traction on. It's a drug that it's causing thousands of deaths. We've seen about 6,000 deaths just in California alone each year over the last 2 years. And so in addition to that, we're seeing those that don't die, we're seeing high levels of addiction and really changing the way people behave. It's causing more homelessness. When you talk to social justice workers and law enforcement officials, they're both on agreement here that fentanyl has really increased the number of homelessness and the number of people suffering from drug addiction. And so what this Prop 36 would do was give the courts a way to incentivize people to get treatment and to get off drugs.
And in terms of the retail theft, what does it do? So it will, if you do more than one, or is it after a couple of offenses, then you would?
Yes, multiple offenses would then trigger the ability for the courts to charge a felony. One of the other things it does is it allows for aggregation. A lot of people think that Prop 47 is the reason that we have a $950 threshold for felony to miss the difference between misdemeanor and felonies in the state. It was actually passed by the legislature years prior to that, but Prop 47 essentially codified how these thefts would be charged and made sure that they were all misdemeanors. And it would allow, if Prop 36 passes, this would allow courts to look at a repeat offender. So maybe he didn't steal $950 when he went into the store this time, but we can look across both in, he could be stealing from the same store, multiple stores, and we can aggregate those. We can add the totals together and say, now he's above, he or she has now stolen above $950, so this can be charged a felony. It also expands jurisdictional efforts, so aggregation could occur. Maybe someone's stealing in Northern California some of the time, Southern California some of the time, gets arrested, and these prosecutors communicate and realize, oh, this is, we have a serial offender here. And so it would allow for aggregation at that level as well. So the goal here, and we've talked to the prosecutors and the people that are the proponents behind this measure, they say that our goal here is not to fill prisons, which critics of the measure wholeheartedly believe that if Prop 36 passes, that we're going back to a war on drugs and that prisons will potentially be filled. Proponents say that that's by no means their goal here. The goal is to curb behavior that's detrimental to the state by, one, having consequences for crimes, and two, really giving an option for those who are suffering drug addiction to find help and get back on a path to success.
Now, what about the legislature? I mean, there was these other bills that they're trying to solve this. What is their solution?
The last few weeks, we've been through a lot of ups and downs with what the legislature wants to do in regards to this. So they had their package of retail theft bills, and they also, in addition to retail theft, they have a whole package of public safety bills with a goal of making California safer. And there's some fear in lawmakers. The governor expressed this fear himself in his May budget revise when he discussed cuts to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, that he was really hesitant to make significant cuts because if this proposition passes, he's aware that more people could end up in prison, that we might need some funding there to balance this. He's also expressed, and other lawmakers have expressed, that their fear that this could fill prisons, that this could be a return to the war on drugs. When we talk to proponents, they say that comparing fentanyl to crack cocaine, which is what the legislature likes to do, they say this is an apples to oranges comparison, that a lot of times people that end up addicted to fentanyl, they didn't mean to. Some of these are young, and people that died from fentanyl overdoses, they didn't even realize what they were purchasing was fentanyl. This is a contaminated product, and it's potency. The fact that 1 kilogram can kill 500,000 people, they say, is a distinction between it and crack cocaine. And as the contamination issue relates, people that were basically addicted to crack or cocaine, they knew what they were buying. They went with the intention of purchasing this narcotic. Whereas a lot of people that have become addicted to fentanyl, they thought they were buying something else. Some thought they were buying Adderall or some sort of pharmaceutical medication that was actually a counterfeit that contained it. And because it's so addictive and so deadly, some die on the spot. We've talked to numerous family members who've lost children to this. And then some that don't die now become severely addicted. So they didn't want to be on opioids, but now they find themselves addicted to it. And that's why Some say we need a different approach, that this is not a return to the war on drugs. This is an attempt to deal with a dangerous narcotic.
Now, the packages that the legislature wants to pass, what would they do to the retail theft then?
So the package that they want to pass really would focus on organized retail theft and would increase penalties for some organized retail theft offenders. It's nowhere near as strict. When we look at the differences between the packages of bills in the legislature and the Proposition 36, Proposition 36 goes much farther. It's really...
It targets everybody, essentially. If you pass these thresholds or if you do in terms of drugs, then it targets everybody. But then the other ones, it's more focused. The legislature, it's more focused on organized.
Right? Yes, absolutely. And there was an interesting maneuver that the legislature attempted that because there's fears that Prop 36 would pass, they introduced some clauses in their bills that would have made them inoperable if Prop 36 had passed. But this created division in the Democratic Party. And we spoke with both Democrat and Republican lawmakers who told us that they did not agree with these clauses. Some lawmakers even pulled their bills entirely. Others dropped off and other lawmakers even picked up one bill. So that was their first attempt to how to respond to Prop 36. They then shifted gears and attempted to introduce their own measure, which would have competed with Prop 36. So this was a proposal by the legislature to also somewhat reform Prop 47. And this comes on the heels of many people for the last several years saying that Prop 47 should not be reformed. But they've, because of calls from constituents and lawmakers recognizing the impacts on their communities, there was a shift in thinking there. So they did attempt in the last days before the summer recess to introduce their own ballot measure, which would have competed with Prop 36. But again, they didn't have the votes internally. And the Democrats don't need Republican support for any bill. Because we have a supermajority in the state, if the Democrats can agree on something, they can get it pushed through. But on this issue, there was just a divide. There wasn't a consensus of opinion in how best to handle organized retail theft or the drug addiction issues that some say are feeding into the retail theft. So both of those attempts fell through. So the inoperability clauses were removed from the bills. Now those bills, we're right now in the middle of summer recess. As we come back for the last month of this session, we expect to see those bills. Both the governor's office and lawmakers tell us that the bills will likely get passed. It's possible we'll see amendments as negotiations continue, as they work through respective houses. But we should see these bills signed relatively early into the fall so that we will have some changes. But they also removed the urgency clauses. So there was a time when these bills were in place when, had they been signed, the laws would have taken effect immediately. Those were also removed before the end of the recess. So if this package of retail theft bills is signed, nothing will take effect until January 1st. And Prop 36, if it's approved by voters in November, will essentially supersede all of those. Because it goes further and it's the will of the voters, it will take the place of, even though some of these things are complementary, there are some elements of the bills and the proposition that benefit each other. Both are attempting to navigate different elements of the retail theft issue.
So essentially for Californians to see a big change in this retail theft, probably it will be either in November or next year, beginning of next year, to see some impacts.
Yes, definitely. And if voters do approve the ballot measure in November, we will see some prosecutors taking this and moving immediately. If it's all going to depend on how Californians see this issue and what changes they would like to see made. That's really where we stand here now.
Travis Gilmore, reporter at Epoch Times. It was great to have you on California Insider.
Thank you, Siamak. Always my pleasure.